We're still looking at some things that relate to the book, and in the second point, there is this statement. There was that guy again. What were some of the personality traits that Randall demonstrated at the beginning of his introduction with Michael? Now remember, Michael is the non-Christian. Randall is the fellow who is the Christian. And Randall's trying to teach Michael. What were some of the personality traits that Randall demonstrated at the beginning or at the start of his introduction?
One was a handshake.
All right, he's friendly. He's outgoing. You know, and what kind of handshake was it? Anybody, you know, what kind of handshake? What kind of handshake can you get from somebody? Anybody ever get a handshake that was not too memorable?
Limp.
All right, it could be limp. That's one.
Pressure.
All right, there's the other guy that squeezes you to death that feels like the gorilla's got a hold of you and won't let go. What else? What about the germaphobe? You know, maybe slips a finger or two fingers into your hands, and that's as much as you get. Every once in a while, that happens to me. I don't know if they think I have dirty hands or if that's a habit. But, you know, that always strikes me as odd. You know, they really don't want to fully engage. But as Betty said, you kind of got the sandwich. There are some people, and that does make an impression on you. They sort of sandwich their hand in between both of their hands and clasp it warmly. So he was very friendly, very, very outgoing. What else?
One comment on your two-finger shake, unless it's a very young person.
Yes, and that, right, you
so
can,
yeah. Learned that I don't engage very far because it hurts.
Right, yes, a good point. And hopefully you know that, but if a person looks reasonably healthy and everything, you kind of wonder a little bit. But
they still can look healthy.
Yeah, that's true. Arthritis can strike people at any age and any circumstance.
Sometimes they hump your hand so long or else they just hang on to it.
I've got a sore shoulder. I need to go to the chiro. But there's that too. You also have him, I think. He's smiling. He's someone who comes on as you look at the book. He's someone who exudes confidence and so forth. Not cocky, but he's someone who you would warm up to. Doesn't look like he's a threat. Doesn't look like it's going to be a problem meeting. Here's someone who's going to be out there on the first day greeting you.
He's upbeat and cheerful.
Yes, upbeat, cheerful. That would be a good general description. In your opinion, moving down a little further, did Randall plan or premeditate his introduction to Michael? Now think carefully about that. Do you think he planned or premeditated the introduction? You think he thought, boy, there's this guy that's going to show up today and I'm going to be ready for him.
You know, he might have been thinking about it over time, seeing him come in, and he might have thought,
well,
okay, there's another contact that I need to make. You know, it's something he might have been thinking. You know, that he actually deliberately said, okay, I'm going to do it this day.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that he had it 1, 2, 3. I'm going to shake his hand for this long, and I'm going to grab him with both hands, and I'm going to make sure I smile for exactly 35 seconds and so forth. I don't think it was planned out that way. But you do, as you get up and as you go through the day, don't you make a determination to some degree how your day is going to go? You can get out of bed, and you can be in a sourpuss mood, and if you are, then you already have sort of set your mind that it's going to be a bad day. I stubbed my toe, or you know, the coffee was not working, the pot wasn't working, whatever it might be. Or you can decide, I'm going to have a good day. And I think that also might be what we have as far as a point being considered here. Premeditated, whether it was Michael or anybody else, he was going to have a good introduction. Thoughts that you have before we look at item 4? Okay, page 13, if you're just joining us. And there are a couple of copies of the book in the back if you didn't get one yet. Did page 13.4, did Randall's attitude and or appearance have an impact on Mike? What did it look like? Baggy pants, all tattooed up, like we talked about the nurse last time?
Business casual.
All right, I'd say business casual. You have the word immaculate used in the book. He's someone who is dressed well. But there was, in this list that I'm on, there was a discussion a while back. It was a big discussion. And it was about preachers wearing suits and ties and looking formal in the pulpit. Now, the guys, I think, for the most part, that were contributing to this discussion were probably members of larger congregations, working with larger congregations that wanted a more relaxed feel for a lot of reasons, some of which I think may have been doctrinal. But still, there was a big discussion where if you're a preacher, are people going to be put off if you wear a suit and tie? And I found that to be an interesting discussion. Guys that were working with what I would refer to as smaller congregations, maybe 250 or less didn't seem to be too put off by that. But if you got up into the 300 plus, well, Ray, you're with the larger congregation. How's the preacher generally dress out there? California's kind of its own deal, but...
Generally, the preacher, when he was preaching things, had a suit and tie on, or a sports jacket and tie. Very seldom did they come up to the front without the tie or a sports jacket of some kind.
Okay. Anybody else? You've been at a larger congregation recently, and the preacher was 300 plus. Anybody been at that size congregation recently? What happened with the preacher? Pretty well suited up or not? Oh, okay, so casual dress in a larger congregation?
No, suit.
All right, suit and tie? Well, that's not a very good sampling, but you do see that in some larger congregations where people are going to kind of a laid back.
I know of a congregation out there where they had a lot of young people, and the preacher very seldom wore a tie. But that had to do more with the group, the age group, things that he was in charge of or over.
Yeah. Clothing can make a difference as far as how people are perceived, but I still think that even if you're a suit and tie guy, can't you make people feel comfortable? Sure. And if you're a baggy pants kind of guy, can't you still make people feel comfortable? Yes. So clothes don't really make the man or the woman per se. They can have some effect on perception, but it's probably going, you know, you see the guy in the coat and tie, he's coming towards you, you might not know exactly what he has in mind. But once he comes up and grabs your hand, as we talked about, and he's friendly, he smiles at you and so forth, I think for a lot of people, the idea that he's in a coat and tie, that just goes out the window. They're now concentrating on what he says, and he has a friendly appearance and so forth. So I'm not sure that that debate is really one that merits a lot of attention. All right, three hands. Glenda will take you, and then Stan will go to you, and then Betty will take your thought.
If you've ever seen anybody that works in shipping and receiving, they're not wearing a white pressed shirt. Mm-hmm. I mean, today's world, it's t-shirt, and, you know, hat. I mean, his appearance was plain and crisp.
Yeah. Well, this may not be the best illustration, but if you think back to Happy Days and the Fonz, he didn't exactly look like a slob. I mean, the dress was very casual as far as the t-shirt, but you remember the t-shirt, the jacket, and so forth, he still, with that very casual appearance, still looked nice. So if you have somebody that has dressed down, even if they've got some holy jeans, you know, they're out there on the factory floor and the jeans are taking a beating, you can still give a decent appearance, and certainly the mannerisms that you have are going to play into that in a big way.
You can take two people, though, that are identical in personality and intent, whatever, and the person who dresses sharply is going to make an impression that the person who dresses like a biker is not going to make, or the impression that someone who is all tattooed, wearing a sweatshirt that's got the sleeves torn off of it, whatever, in this particular case, Michael might have walked away from there, shaking his head, saying, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, there is a first impression, and that does count. But with that first impression, there's going to be a second impression and a third impression, and those also count greatly. But we do want to give some consideration to that first impression. Betty?
Yeah, I think a lot of the older generation, and this is versus the millennials, and maybe even a generation above them, but more the millennials, they are more into the casual.
Yes.
A lot of the older generation are more comfortable with someone in a suit and tie, and some of the older generation even feel that it's a disrespect to God to walk him, to worship him without being dressed in your best.
Yeah, you will find that maybe a little bit more south of where we are, but it's still up here. And when you look at the older generation, whether it's north, south, east and west, maybe a lesser degree there as far as those directions, but even there sometimes, you will find that older generation, yes, suit, tie, dress, whatever it might be. There have been some congregations that as far as, you know, women and, you know, jeans or slacks, that was pretty much considered a no-no. And for men to wear, you know, jeans or t-shirt when serving at the Lord's table, or have a sweater on when you preach, again, that just wasn't done because they were trying to show respect for God. So there are a lot of things that come into play there. Hopefully people will want to dress their best and do their best in that regard. When you look at some of the workplaces, you think about some places like Google, you think about places like Facebook. If you've seen, and I'll talk about him a little bit more later, Mark Zuckerberg. Anybody seen a picture of him? What's the image that comes to mind instantly?
Hoodie.
Well, okay, that wasn't the first thing that came to my mind, but hoodie would be one. What else? No, specifically the dress. What do you see? Upper body. A t-shirt. That's the image that I have of Mark Zuckerberg. Usually it's a gray or maybe a black t-shirt. And then he's got on, you know, nothing really fancy as far as pants, slacks or jeans. But there's no tie, typically, that you see him very, very laid back. And, you know, he's the CEO of a major company. But you look at generations before that, and the idea that somebody would be the CEO of Boeing or the CEO of UPS, and he would show up. Now, I don't know what Zuckerberg would show up at a board meeting. It might be differently. But if one of those guys were to have a meeting with all the employees, previous generations, 99.9% of the time it's going to be in a suit and tie if it's a man. But things have definitely changed. All right, let's take a look at point five. Randall shifted the relationship immediately after doing after introducing himself. How did he do it?
He said he was his new friend.
All right, made that introduction. You're my new friend. And is there anything else we might add? He gave him a gift. All right, I've got a couple thoughts about that. You think, given a big, juicy... Anybody remember the donuts? I'm going to mispronounce them, but they are the Polish donuts. Yeah, well, that's why I didn't pronounce. We've got about three pronunciations there. All right, but you know what those donuts are, right? They're just riddled with calories. You eat one, and that's probably about enough for 2 days' calories. But you know, you go up and you give something like that to somebody. Always a good choice? No. Some people might not be able to have it. Some people are perhaps going, they're working on a diet, and that's the last thing that they want. So that might not be a good choice. But at least...
didn't he come in a lot of the time in the morning with coffee and donuts?
Yes. So like I say, yes, there was already... He was using his head.
Yeah,
and
he already had seen him.
Yeah, he was able to make the inference that, okay, here's a guy who would eat that kind of food. So that's not really discussed in the book as far as use some common sense there. But I remember a speaker one day. Old story. I can't even remember where I heard it. It was more than 20 years ago. But this speaker talked about the fact he was giving attention to how you would, you know, do some little things for your wife. And he said, my wife loves Snicker bars. And, you know, I bring her a Snicker bar every once in a while. So he's headed home. And, you know, thought, well, it's been a while since I bought my wife a Snicker bar and, you know, bought one and took it home. And then later, he got some feedback. And the feedback, the gist of it was, somebody in the seminar also bought a Snicker bar, took it home to his wife, and she about clobbered him with it. You know, she didn't like Snicker bars. So just because it works here, that doesn't mean that it's going to work over here. So I think we've all got the common sense to realize that, but bear in mind that just because he uses a donut, that's not going to work for everybody else. For somebody else, it might be this or that. Maybe it's just a kind word, but the thought counts. Point six, after Randall's shift of conversation, what critical and bold move did Randall make? After the shift in conversation, what critical and bold move did Randall make? Here's your yummy donut. Yeah, I might have something later. That word might was one of the key words there. I might have something good later for you. Again, I understand what's being said. I think that there is some value here. But at the same time, as you're dealing with people, I wrote the word slimy in my book. As you're dealing with salespeople, if you're looking at this from a secular perspective, can a salesman be slimy?
No.
What's a slimy salesman?
Oh.
Well, okay, there would be that. But if we try to become a little more specific, a slimy salesman, what kind of tactic would he use?
They'll give you the good big picture now and slip into bad details later.
All right, there would be that. That's a slimy salesman. What else?
I think the term sleazy, one that you can't always trust.
All right, there's something about there that's just not completely on the up and up. And as I look at this, I just want to kind of put an asterisk there. I've maybe got something for you better, possibly a little bit later. You know, be careful with that kind of thing. His intentions were good, and we understand what he was saying as far as the bread of life, the gospel of Christ. But again, it just comes back to using some common sense as you interact with people. Not everything that you have here is going to work for every person, every situation. This was what worked for him, and we can perhaps build off of it and apply our own skills and abilities in an appropriate way. But
that may have been a good way for him to do it, but you're right, it may not be a good way for somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
Because the attitude and the makeup and things that you have in your regular life anyhow.
Yeah. There's anybody know what Hardiman's Tabernacle of Sermons are? Okay, these were preached in Nashville, Tennessee in about 1943 or so. If you were to go back and look at these sermons, well, you'd find, you go back into the 1940s and you find some people who were pretty well educated, and they're going to be using some words in ways that you don't typically hear now. There's been more than one younger preacher who decided that he needed a sermon for Sunday. So he went back into that series of sermons and decided that he was going to make that his sermon. That would almost be like somebody who gets up and starts using English from the 1800s. It's obvious that you don't talk that way. It's obvious that you didn't design that sermon. And when you start dealing with this kind of thing, it's not real. It's fake. And people understand that. People realize that. And you're not going to be successful. So be real. Use your own talents. There's some things here that you can work with and apply, and some things that you may not be able to use.
Talking about how salesmen can be slimy. They can use tricks. Kind of a situation like Lloyd and I had when we were trying to buy a car one time. We had looked at the car and we had talked to the salesman for quite a while, and we had still undecided whether we wanted to buy it. Well, he comes along and says, "Well, this other couple wants to look at the car. If you want the car, you need to buy it right now." And Lloyd and I just kind of looked at each other and said, "Well, you can let them test drive it. That's fine with me, you know, no problem." So this couple gets in it and test drives it. "No, that's fine." Lloyd and I went and kind of look around at other cars. Well, a little bit, here come the car back. And the couple got out and talked to the salesman a little bit, and then they kind of went there. Well, the lady went inside, and the man went in a different way. And we thought, well, okay, maybe she just needed to go inside the bathroom or something. So we walked back up to the salesman and said, "Oh, did they decide they wanted to take it?" "No, they didn't want to take it." So I said, "Okay, well, our deal's still on. Are you still interested?" Well, they finally settled with what we wanted to go with. And as we were writing up the deal, I needed to go to the bathroom. And as I walked down the hall, the lady was sitting at her desk.
Yeah.
Working.
Yeah. And people do those kinds of things. Sometimes you'll find someone, this is not nearly as bad as that, but I remember one of my teachers, one of his Bible study techniques, I guess that's the best word, when he was trying to encourage a person to become a Christian, he would take two pieces of paper, small pieces of paper, and say, "Heaven and hell." And he would say, which one do you want? And people would reach for heaven. He'd say, "You can't have that unless you obey the gospel." You remember the dollar commercial? What is it, Geico Insurance? They dangle the dollar down. Anybody ever seen that commercial? And then they grab it back? You know, here's the guy out there, and they're looking to grab the dollar. Now, that may not be slimy, but that, in my mind, is not very tactful. So there are some things that people can do that just sort of leave you with a bad feeling, and just try not to use those. I mean, manipulation, whatever form it takes, is not good. We don't like it in the secular realm, and we shouldn't want it in the spiritual realm either.
I know nowadays people aren't as trustworthy as they used to be. I don't know how trustworthy people were in the 80s, but if someone said something like that to you now, especially a man saying it to a woman, you got to be really careful about what your relationship is with them at that point and how they understand you and that kind of thing.
Yes.
There could be some trust issues.
Absolutely. Anybody else? All right, let's move down a little bit further. After Randall's shift in conversation, that was point six, so point seven. Did Randall seem prepared? Yes or no? Yes. How do you think he got prepared? All right, by study. Remember over there in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2, Paul said to Timothy, preach what? The word. Be urgent when? In season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering. And then 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, Peter says that we want to be ready for a defense. So Peter, Paul reminds us that we want to be on board with knowing God's word. And we've got the memory verses that will come up from time to time. We'll try to at least read those and hopefully remember that they're key sometimes in some Bible studies.
Did we skip the part where he asked, how many times did you eat today?
Yes. don't think we got to that yet, did we?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was the bowl he made. We asked him how many times.
Nope, that's on page 15, about 0.5.
Sorry.
So that's okay. Easy to get things turned around here. All right, point 9. Do you think Randall had been praying for opportunities to seek and save the lost?
Yes.
Anybody see the other day, I said I was going to go back to Mark Zuckerberg. Anybody see the other day that Zuckerberg has turned from quote-unquote atheism and now he's looking for some information about Christianity? Anybody see that in the news? Okay. Anybody further see that he called together some spiritual leaders, I believe they were in the city of Dallas, and wanted to talk to those guys about the Bible? Anybody see that? All right. A couple did. You know what I thought when I saw that? Here we are, we're sitting in class talking about this book. Here's a guy, a well-known guy, who's looking for information about the truth. What do you think Mr. Zuckerberg needs? I think he needs a copy of Muscle and the Shovel. Are we all agreed?
Yeah.
Well, I found somebody. Carol Harper is willing to send Mr. Zuckerberg a personalized note and a copy of the book. So she's got in an envelope out there in the foyer table since I'll be out on next week, and she's willing to ship that out. But I tell you that not to brag and not to, you know, overly elevate Carol, but just to let you know that when people have an interest in that, they might be the guy next door, they might be the CEO of a major company. Think souls. Look at people, and when there's that opportunity to teach, to send them information, do it. Now somebody says, now wait a minute, Brad, do you think you're really going to be able to get that to him? I don't know. I found his address online. Could it be that somebody scans his mail? Yes. Could it be that his wife, his kids, his housekeeper gets the book? Yes. But do you remember where we were in the first class? What did we talk about? The P of God. Anybody remember that key word? The providence of God. I'm going to trust in the providence of God that that book either gets to him, if he's willing to read it, use it, or if not him, trust in God's providence that it's going to get to somebody else. So one of our books is going to go out to Mr. Zuckerberg, hopefully. So you might pray for him in the book that it falls into the right heart. Who knows? He might be a member of the church before the end of the year.
And on the opposite side of that coin was Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes, I didn't mention him.
Who was nothing elite, despicable, crumb of the earth, but somebody from the church cared and studied with him.
Yes. Yeah, there was a lady, I don't know, maybe from Texas. I think she was down south. I'd have to go back and look again at the details. But yeah, she thought, well, hey, I'm going to send that guy a Bible study. Contact with him was initiated, and he was converted. There was another one. I think the book was called The Meanest Man in Texas. He was guilty of either mass murder or some really heinous crimes. And just a very terrible fellow. But somebody, again, was able to get him the gospel. So, when we, you know, it's easy to sing the gospel is for all when we come and, you know, assemble together on Sunday or Wednesday, and that's a great song. We love the song. And then we go out the doors thinking, well, the gospel's not for you or not for them. So we want to see if we can learn to shift our thinking. Anybody else? Okay, let's go back to that point. Do you think Randall was praying for opportunities to seek and save the lost? I believe when you look at his character, yes. Do you think that Mr. Mike was the only person that Randall was focusing on? No, and we know that because of what we have later in the book. 11, what can you, we might change that to we, what can we do to be more prepared to engage someone in a spiritual conversation?
I had one the other day with the rug man. He, you know, brings our rugs every Monday, and then he came in, and I said, I loaned him my key card because we're short key fobs, and I said, make sure you return it. He said, or you'll say, where's my effing card? I said, well, I don't talk that way, and it's, I don't think it's that kind of card. He goes, well, you'll have to pardon my language. I used to work with the fire department. I said, oh, so you've been close to the fire then.
Good for you, Glenda. You just were on a roll, huh?
So he's like, yes, I'm sorry.
Well, good for you. But you do find that's a perfect illustration to show. I've talked to a few rug guys, too, in my time, but that's a perfect illustration to show that there are those times where, I mean, you're not going to get a full-fledged Bible study, but you can make the points and start a person thinking in the right direction. And that's what we want to do. That's what we have here. And that's how a lot of people have been converted. I want to follow up on that, but we'll stop and see if there's anything that somebody else wants to discuss.
I had that same kind of situation at work the other day. I worked with a young lady over there. And there's times that she, just a few times that she said a word that she probably shouldn't have said. I didn't think it was all that bad, but she felt it was all that bad. And she says, I guess I need to put a filter on my mouth. I said, it's okay, I got a filter in my pocket, I'll give you. I'll give you from one of my cards.
Yeah.
One of my cards that has the church address.
Yeah, and it's just those moments. And we've got those cards, and they can be so productive. Two quick illustrations, and again, not to brag, but to give you an illustration. I was in Sam's Club within the last 10 days, passing by a lady who was involved with a display. She was trying to sell pillows. And she said, hey, let me tell you about my pillow. All right. I gave her a couple minutes of my time. Now, my thinking is, if I have... No, I'm talking about people like that, some stranger, I don't know. But my thinking is, if I've given you a couple minutes of my time, turnabout's fair play, isn't it? I've given something to you. Now, you, to a certain degree, owe me a little bit. You owe me a little bit. Hey, that's really interesting. And then I just come right out and I say, do you read the Bible? Now, that may not be the smoothest segue, but I'll tell you what, it gets their attention. And she said, yes, I do. I said, we have got a great devotional by email. Use the web, use email? Well, yeah. Okay, now I've got her engaged a little bit more. And I whip out a card. Or it might be that there's the Lord Let Me Grow Bible study that we have. Steve's not here, I don't think, is he? I didn't see him. Okay. We were coming home. We rode together to the hockey game in Kalamazoo. And it was late. We were both tired. We saw something weird up ahead. And we got a little closer. Steve almost went by it. And then we figured out it was the police. They were flagging people over. And I've had this experience with Stan as well. But this night it was with Steve. And they were checking, I assume, for drunk driving. But they were also looking to check driver's licenses and registrations and insurance, that kind of stuff. So the cop says, who are you? And I thought, well, let's just cut to the chase here. I said, I'm a preacher. We're coming back from a church hockey game. Oh, okay. I thought that would eliminate the drunk driving questions. No, not that Steve was, going to have a problem with that. I'll make that clear. But anyway, that took care of that. And he just said, well, let me see your driver's license and registration. And then, once again, that same principle. You've taken up some of my time. I'm going to take up a minute of your time. Say, hey, I don't know if you read the Bible or not, but we've got a really great Bible correspondence course. Here's a card. I'm not ashamed to do that. I don't think any Christian should be ashamed to do that. Now, what do they do with the card? Do they throw it away? Maybe. But at least I feel a little bit better on the day of judgment. Nobody ever told me. Nobody ever contacted me. Those guys are in my area. Same thing with Ray. I've given you an opportunity. I put a seed in your life. And whatever you did with the seed was up to you. But at least with the tools that I had available at that time, and again, it's very short, the lady in Sam's Club, or maybe it's a cashier at a fast food place, whatever that is. And, you kind of have to once again go back. Every time I see a stranger, I'm not just out passing them downtown. I don't think that's probably a good use of time and resources. But you look for those opportunities where Glenda, the great response that she had, the great response that Ray had, and you look for those opportunities and you use them.
You don't always know where those are going to go either. A couple of weeks ago, Marcia and I were out for lunch, and we talked to the fellow that was our waiter, started talking about the weather. But anyway, it turns out that this fellow just had a tragedy in his family, and that, thinking back over the past, there's a list of times when people are more susceptible to being talked to, and so I said, bells went off, here's somebody who needs or could use or is a good prospect, and so we gave him a copy of the Muscle and Shovel.
Yep, you never know. But that's, Jesus said be a light. You don't have to be the sun, but just try to turn the light on when there's an opportunity. Dolores?
I don't really like sharing this because it's not a great response. But when we went to San Antonio a couple of weeks ago, we were walking through the mall on the river. It was beautiful. And Sherman said, hey, you go in Disney and look around. There's a cologne thing out here. I'm going to go look. So we met back up near the cologne place, and the girl was very good at her job. I bet you'll like this one on him compared to this one, blah, blah, blah. And she began to talk about her boyfriend and how their relationship was suffering, and she seemed down, and we said, oh, we're sorry. Well, I mean, there was a situation that was not healthy, but we listened, and she began to literally just pour her heart out about how he disrespected her, and she knew that that was not how it should be with a, a couple, and asked us how long we'd been married. And after she fell over from shock, she stood back up and said, that's how it's supposed to be. Well, then another person was standing there, and Sherman said, oh, it looks like you have someone else you need to talk to. You can go talk to them. And she said, yeah, I do, but when I get back, can we talk some more? Well, my husband is better than I have, because I misunderstood and thought she was trying to sell more cologne.
Oh, okay.
And I said, oh, we've probably got all we need. And as she walked off, Sherman said, I don't think that's what she meant. And I have prayed for her every day since we've gotten back, mm-hmm. because it just breaks my heart.
Well, and that, I think that's a good illustration. That's a good illustration for a couple of reasons. There are sometimes, it's always the, if I would have remembered to say this at that time, or if I would have had another minute to think about it, I would have said this and it would have been so much better. You never know. But again, you've opened the door. Maybe she'll meet somebody else, and that will spark a conversation. You guys remember, hey, I met these people too, and then it goes from there. But God's providence is what I would trust in there.
Now, I did ask her if she went to church, and I asked her, does her friend respect her? She said no. I said, well, I think you need to think twice about the relationship you're in. Mm-hmm. So I did just leave it cold.
Yeah. I wrote a BNP. I don't know if you remember that. It was probably a month ago. There was a young lady. It was actually at a muffler shop down in Elkhart, waiting on my vehicle to come off the rack, and she initiated a conversation with me and told me about how she got the job, and I guess I looked friendly, and she just started to go into great details about how she was engaged to this fellow who was in prison, why he was in prison, and they had a child together, and I mean, it was a very lengthy story. But before we disconnected, again, I gave her information. In that case, I gave her a business card. Some days I kind of feel like the CIA, because I feel like, you know, I've got about seven different cards I can give, and it's kind of like, well, okay, let's see. Which one? This one. I'm going to give you this one. And people look a little strange sometimes when I'm going through the cards. But, you know, if you've got multiple cards, if it's a lady, give her a Christian woman card. We've got some cards here for Goshen. You can give them a card as far as Word of Worship. If it's a Bible study contact, give them a Lord, let me grow card. So it doesn't hurt to have you know, a little bit of a variety in the wallet, in the purse, and that's something you can do. Roberto?
You talk about planting the seed, you know, this man right here, planting the seed. I used to be an alcoholic, on drugs real bad. We had a Bible study one night. I was drunk when we had a Bible study. He opened my eyes, you know. Now I quit drinking, quit doing drugs. He invited me to go to church. I was stubborn, didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. And finally, I said, well, you know, I decided it's time. You know, I need to go. Now my wife and I go to church all the time. We're regulars there.
Well, Jesus said the seed is the word of God. And that seed gets planted in a lot of places. Sometimes it doesn't grow. Sometimes it sprouts and it just really takes off. But that's what we're looking for, places where the seed can be put. And sometimes that seed doesn't need a lot of watering. I mean, we may be in a hurry and not even much dirt is cast on the seed.
I've been blessed ever since. You know.
He's learning. He's learning. He hasn't made a decision yet to come to Christ, but he's learning.
Okay.
Still working on it.
Okay.
We work together. We study a lot.
Yeah, it does. And that's what we see when we look at the information here with Muscle and a Shovel. Good. Are we done? Don't want to cut anybody off, but I want to make sure we don't miss anybody. Okay, let's head over to our new chapter, chapter 3. Are they nuts or what? List three ways the adversary has hindered your Christian growth. What would you say? One answer. Devil, hindering, preventing Christian growth. What would one way be?
Busyness.
All right, people feel like they're just occupied. Jesus, remember, he talked about the seed being choked out by the cares, the riches of the world, so sometimes it's just too much activity. That would be one. What else?
Family.
All right, sometimes relationships, especially when you look at family, Maybe you've got younger kids, or maybe you just have a large family. Family would be an answer too. Anything else?
Materialism.
You said materialism? Okay, materialism, covetousness, you could put an asterisk there. Lack of study? All right, fear would be a good one. I put in discouragement as well. Sometimes it's a bad example. Christian growth is hindered by that. Any other answers that you had? Okay, then let's look at point two. List three things that you can do this week that will help you be better prepared to talk to a lost person about the Bible.
Memorize your Bible verse.
All right, try to spend more time in the Word, and whether or not you memorize it, at least try to become familiar with it. Remember what we said. Even if you can't be Johnny on the spot with a Bible verse, you can tell a person what? I'll be back. It may be tomorrow. I may call you. I may text you. I may send you an email. But I will get back with you. That is in the Bible. I just need a chance to find out where it is. So that's good. What else?
Prayer.
All right. I think that should be towards the top of the list. Anything else? All right. When you look at the book, that certainly is there. Anything else? All right. Have some of the cards to put in the purse or the wallet. Anything else? What about opening our eyes? And looking for those people, seeing those people. Oftentimes, we have opportunities, and they're missed opportunities. They're literally, like I say, if somebody calls you on the phone and they're trying to sell you a product, you're probably not going to get very far. They're just going to hang up on you. But again, my philosophy is, and that may not work for you, but my philosophy is if you want a few minutes of my time, I'm going through Sam's, I'm going through Walmart, there's Meijer, and there's somebody who's doing a demonstration, fine. I'll sample your chicken, I'll eat your brownie, no rice, but whatever that is, if it's palatable for me, I will try that, I will give you some feedback, but I want a little something in return. I think that's fair. Four passages, Old and New Testaments, on patience and persistence. What did we come up with? All right, that would be a good one. Anybody else? Well, maybe we can work ahead a little bit since we've got a week off. What about Galatians 6, verse 9? Be not weary in well-doing. Stick with it. Revelation 3, verse 10, keep the work of patience. What about James 1, verse 12? Blessed is he that endures. Remember that verse? And then John chapter 15, verse 7, Jesus said, abide in me. I'm the vine. So you do have multiple verses, Old Testament and New, that talk about patience and persistence. Anything that you want to add or ask at this juncture? Okay, let's see what we can do as far as the next couple minutes. How long did Randall and Mike develop their friendship to the point in the story? To this point in the story? I had a couple answers there that were a little jumbled together. Yeah, I'd say 3.5-4 months. It wasn't very long, but they're moving along. Sometimes that's going to be sufficient to help a person finally get things headed in the right way. Sometimes it may take years. There's just no way to tell, but we continue to work and help people to the best of our ability. Point two, what did Randall persistently do in his interactions with Mike?
He asked spiritual questions.
Yeah, asked spiritual questions. One temptation as you're talking to people and communicating information about the gospel is what? It's just like a parent dealing with a child. What might you as the parent be willing to do? You think there might be times where you're motivated to preach to the child? Tell the child, you do this, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this. Well, when we come to worship, having a sermon may not be a bad idea. But if we deal with people on a regular basis and we're preaching to them all the time, how well do you think that's probably going to go over? Probably not so swell. But if instead of you telling them stuff, what do? You ask them. Now, how does that change the dynamic? All right, they're having to think of an answer. And if they come up with the wrong answer, then you have a brand new opening to go and discuss things. But be very, very careful as far as just trying to. Now, sometimes there are statements that need to be made. People do need to be told things, but also be wary of that issue.